I found an old book at a thrift shop the other day, and I'm, even though I've sworn not to buy any more books, I bought it. But it's a book of it's the wisdom of Thich Nhat Hanh, and it was first published in the very early 70s. So it's a really old book of his, and I know a lot of you are really familiar with Thich Nhat Hanh, and he's so well known and such a good teacher, but he's so commercialized now. You know, his books, there's millions. And this book is old enough that it says how few books have been published in English of Thich Nhat Hanh. So it's really old. But there's an article by his translator, and he was talking about a tour he was on with Thich Nhat Hanh in 1967, when Thich Nhat Hanh was in this country. And he was speaking to different groups, and he was trying to just give the Vietnamese people a face to Americans, so people would just understand who his people were. And this, long before he ever taught Buddhism or meditation, he didn't really begin teaching meditation until, I think, almost the early 80s. Because he had no, that was not a connection that was there for him. And people there were not that many people interested in that. So he was here as a peace activist. And because he has always done a lot of research and has a real affinity for Jesus, a lot of his early scholarly work was on Jesus. And so a lot of churches in America were very interested in him, and there was a really nice connection with American Christian churches and his lecture tour. And he was at one church, it was a Christian church, I don't know the denomination, in St. Louis, I think. And he was, the translator said that he always just gave this beautiful story about his country and what the countryside was like and what the people were like and the children. And usually people just he just told beautifully, this beautiful storyteller. And so it really made people see the country that we were involved in this war with and see the people and what their lives were like. So it often would transform people just in terms of their real, a different attitude about the war. And he was talking, doing this talk about children flying kites in Vietnam in the country. And after the talk, a man stood up who was furious and really angry and really loud and said to him, if you care so much about your people, why aren't you back there helping them and doctoring to them and finding shelter for them and taking care of them there? And the whole audience Thich Nhat Hanh has a very, very soft voice. It's almost impossible to hear him. And so this person standing up and shouting was just real shocking in the whole audience. And the translator was so shocked. He said, I even can't remember everything the man said. He was, because his loud voice and his red face and his real being really upset was so disturbing to him, it kind of blocked it out. And Thich Nhat Hanh was silent for a minute or two, and then he said, you know, if you want to nurture a plant, you don't just water the leaves, you have to water the roots or the tree will die. And he said he needed to come to other countries and to America to get to the roots. And he knew that, you know, we were one of the countries bombing this country. So he to save his people, he had to try to get to the roots. So his tree was in danger, but just watering the leaves wasn't going to save it. But then after he said that, and the audience, the translator said people were so kind of blown away that this very angry, aggressive comment was had such a gentle answer, and they said it made them, most of the people in the audience, even more impressed with Thich Nhat Hanh's ability to be a peacemaker, because he didn't respond in anger, and he responded with gentleness. But after that question came up, he said something to the moderator, and he left the room. And so the translator went out a few minutes later to just check on him. And what Thich Nhat Hanh told him was, you know, as soon as the man just kind of verbally attacked him, he said he began just to breathe, just to do his practice, and to breathe. And he said, but it took him, he had to breathe too deeply and for too long. And so he knew he had to leave the room. So it was his way, I think, of saying he knew the anger had gotten to him. He knew he couldn't, he knew he had to work with it, and it took him a little bit longer to work with it than he felt was right for him. And he had worked so much with so much anger all his life, you can just imagine. And here this one person was able to just tap right in and go right to his core. And I loved him saying it took him had to breathe too many times and too deeply. And so he had to leave the room and take care of himself. He had to deal with it a little bit more. And I think we've had some other conversations about right speech and some other things we've been talking about. And when I read that story, I thought, here is a man who had every reason to have righteous indignation, right? Righteous anger that we talk about so much. So many of us will say, well, if it's righteous anger, it's good anger. And I think if there's anybody who could speak to that, it would be Thich Nhat Hanh. And even for him, he knew when there was anger arising in him. He knew he hadn't rooted it out. He knew that he was still capable. He was still capable of being the person that he was being attacked by. You know, he could see, he saw, he knew in that moment when he felt that anger, he knew he was capable of everything that any enemy of his country was capable of. And he was reminded of that, which is not a bad thing to be reminded of. But he also knew he had to step away and take a little bit more time, because that's not who he wanted to be. He knew that any time you respond in anger, that you just become, you become the anger. You become that thing that you're working so hard to eliminate in the world. And I just wanted to share that story. And some of you may have experiences with Thich Nhat Hanh, or with your own practice that you'd like to share. And the other thing that was interesting, and then Marielle. Thich Nhat Hanh was in 1967, he was already in his 40s. You know, he looked like he still looks so much younger. He's almost 90, I mean, he's in his late 80s now. But he was not just a kid, you know, just starting out on his practice. Mary?
I think one of the favorite things I've ever read by Thich Nhat Hanh, I've said it before, is his idea that the rager is the one that's suffering from the rage. So if we can remember that's the person, the angry person is the one suffering from the anger.
Right, that's where the suffering is.
We don't have to let it inspire anger in us.
Yes.
And I just learned from my interviews with Bhante Sujatha and stuff that anger really is not, it's negative, even when it's justified and righteous and everything else, and it can spur on good action. Mm-hmm. But the emotion of anger is not it's not a peaceful emotion. It doesn't feel good. Yeah.
You know, when I first started practice, if I would have heard something like that, I would have been kind of discouraged. You know, you're thinking, oh, here's Thich Nhat Hanh, and you know, he has such an issue trying to deal with this too. You know, you just think, I had this distorted idea of like what, you know, the monks were like. But I think as my practice, you know, matured, I guess you'd call it. You see that as such a positive. You know, you learn, it's like, oh my gosh, and even encouraging me to further my practice and keep my practice up and continue, knowing that it really takes a lot of work.
Right, it's comforting after a while, right, to realize this talking about uprooting, pulling anger out by its roots, that's not just, we can't give lip service to it. It's really a lot of work. And it's work for everyone. It's never easy, I don't think.
I'm having a hard time dealing with members of my family who are very conservative Christian. And on my Facebook, they're putting out very hateful, almost bigoted messages repeatedly. So I'm having a hard time dealing with my feelings about that. So the worry about their venom, their venomous behavior, and what my response is to that.
What your emotional response is.
Yeah, feelings are, especially since they are my family.
Especially since they're your family, right?
Yes.
That's why it happens.
Yes. I mean, we go back and forth, and then we say, I love you. I love you, you know. But it's just the division between family members.
Is that what's troubling, or that they're just putting this stuff out on Facebook?
It's what I'm feeling, I guess. Mm-hmm. You know, and I'm just having a hard time dealing with that because they're family. It's a personal thing. You know, so these are the people that I grew up with, and sometimes I don't recognize them.
Are they teasing you?
They're not trying to make me personally change my mind. It's just that my sister, especially one of them, I just imagine her being on her computer and picking out all these things to be angry about, you know, and just putting them out there to prove her point instead of looking at all sides of it, you know. So,
can you unfriend your family?
I did briefly unfriend her.
That's a temporary thing
because then I'm like, I unfriended my sister.
I'm sure people have a lot of reactions to that. Were you going to say something, Chris?
It just kind of struck me that anger is like an itch. It's an unpleasant sensation that brings pleasure when you can stop it. And so that's what's so seductive about it, is that it constantly wants you to relieve it. There's a pleasure in acting on it. And that's why you have to be so careful of it and just look at it and realize that if you scratch an itch, most of the time it just gets worse. But if you just watch it, it will subside eventually for a while.
I always look at it more as if nobody can really hurt me and nobody can make anger. I have to choose to be hurt or be angered by the action.
And you know, practicing loving kindness towards that person, but loving kindness without any judgment.
Right.
And that's a lot of times, you know, we get our loving kindness gets confused with, if only they would be, you know my loving kindness is that you change. And and I think that's why when it's family, if it was a perfect stranger, you could let it go. You could send them
much
loving kindness.
Yes, yes.
But when it's one of our loved ones, we have a real hard time.
When it's somebody that you knew, I kind of compare it to a person that I knew who had a paranoid schizophrenic brother, and she kept expecting him to get well. She kept expecting him to be the person that she grew up with. You know, so it's like she couldn't accept him as he was. She mm-hmm. kept waiting for him to get well. And that, to me, was very sad. And I think that's kind of what I'm going through with my family, because I remember them as being different people with different ideas and different values.
Yeah.
You know, so that's...
You have to let go.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's hard. It's hard to let go, but that's what you have to do, isn't it? Let them be. You've got to let your little birds fly.
A lot of my family, I think of as rednecks. So
I've worked on that one over a long period of time. So.
1980s, I was on a project in San Francisco, something kept breaking down, so I was just solving the problem, fixing it myself. Finally, the technician came to fix it, and evidently I wasn't fixing it correctly. So, and this man came at me with so much anger, you could see the veins in his neck, the redness, and I was immediately set back, and it's a projection at you. And I set back, sort of had an out-of-body experience, so I took one step back. I don't know why I did this, but I just looked at him and said, "You have no power over me." Just like that. I mean, the interesting thing about it was, I mean, I deal with my world as sort of an idiot, so you're a clown. But the point was, is that I realized that, and it diffused his anger one, so it diffused the moment. Every anger, every situation, interaction is a momentary situation. It has a different energy, it has its own thing. What I did realize about it, as soon as we broke away from that, then, you know, we were able to have a conversation, and I said, "Look, you know, this is what my intention was, only to solve the problem." That, you know, and we talked. He apologized. And I have all this going on. So what he was projecting at me was a world that had nothing to do with me, but it had to do with his world. And I think if we understand that, I think that's part of our mindful practice. Is that, and I think Tyler does this in business really well. Is that they understand that there are needs. You have your own needs. And the needs of the people around you, you know, the people you're interacting with. So if you can be mindful of all of that, the totality of that. And I think in anger, you know, once, whether we get angry or whether someone outside of ourselves is angry, when we're mindful of all of that, then we can do what I never can say his name correctly. What he did, the energy is still powerful, but we can absorb it, understand it, deal with it, and then we may have to step away.
Right.
I remember my heart was racing when this guy came at me. But that is part of what we're developing here as we do this. So.
Yeah, that's a wonderful thing you did. And like Mary was saying, you know, the suffering was in that person. So what a wonderful gift you gave him by letting him break through that.
I gave myself
a
wonderful gift because I was scared. Yeah, I'm so excited. So it worked. It's funny.
I'm learning something interesting here from listening to the other people talk, because I've got a similar situation that happened to me, like happened to Gary when I was in a band. I'll try to make it a brief story, but the sound man was the husband of the woman in the band who was the leader of the band, and her and I had been kind of bickering all night long about silly stuff. He was busy drinking beer and getting aggravated that his wife and I were bickering. So once the gig was over with, he finally had enough, yelled something at me, came flying over a speaker, and this guy was my size only huskier, he's a big guy, came flying over a speaker, lunging at me, literally airborne. So I kind of prepared myself and stiffened myself up so he wouldn't knock me down. And as soon as he made contact and came to a stop, I put my hands on his waist real gently, and I said, "Calm down, Bob." And his face was just in total, I totally disarmed him by the gentleness I had, because there was no anger in me. I'm holding this grown man by his waist real gently, and he just didn't know what to do with that. It was kind of like Gary's gesture. And I realized that I think with angry people, I think to respond in just a gentle, non-confrontational way, I think, is sometimes the best way to handle someone that's angry. If you disarm them by gentle behavior, just like Thich Nhat Hanh did with his response to that person, it was totally disarming.
Yeah, that's well, and there'll be a lot of people who will argue with that too, right? It's better have a loaded weapon with you, just in case. But that's the direction we want to go in, right? The direction we want to go in is to get away from using violence to solve all of our problems. And it has to start here.
We will be doing this. We saw numbers. crazy cult.
Laughter is a wonderful thing, right? It kind of cracks everything open. So it's a gift. Thank you, Garrett. Go ahead.
I just wanted to mention, I don't know if you know, but Thich Nhat Hanh is going to be touring in the United States this year, starting in a couple of months. And he's going to, not going to be in Chicago, I can't remember the closest place he's going to be here, but he's going to be in several locations starting a few months.
And he is really quiet, so listen up.
I'm unable to listen to his podcast because I can't understand it.
I can only read it.
Yeah. Anybody else have a question or a comment? Okay, thank you very much.